This is Yale's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Over Thanksgiving, the White House released what is formally known as the Fourth National Climate Assessment. That's where they tell us what's likely to happen over the next 50 to 100 years. Dr. Amy Snover directs the UW Climate Impacts Group. She didn't work on this assessment, but she worked on previous ones, right, going back to the 1990s?
That's right.
This is where you compile all the data, everything that we know about what climate change is likely to bring. And you have, of course, focused on the Puget Sound region. So give us the lowdown. Last I heard, the timeline had been speeded up. They were now saying that it wasn't my grandchildren who would be experiencing climate change. It was me and my children who would be experiencing climate change firsthand. So where do we stand on that now?
You know, I think the current national climate assessment is really emphasizing the urgency and the immediacy of the climate change issue. So you're absolutely right. We've been thinking about this for a long time, and we often were talking about things that were happening, likely to happen further in the future. But I think what people don't really recognize and what this report really emphasizes is that climate change is an issue now, and it's affecting us now and will be affecting us now in many ways.
All right. So I guess to motivate people, well, first of all, here's what would motivate me to take fewer unnecessary trips. If gas was $20 a gallon, I would sit down and carefully plan out my next trip to the hardware store instead of going to the hardware store, you know, buying a can of paint and going back the next day buying a second can of paint, right? That's not going to happen anytime soon. But if you could scare me sufficiently about what the consequences are going to be, I might change without the price increase, although I really don't know. So what is, you're implying that there is something that no matter what we do is already baked in. Is that right?
That is correct. Right?
Okay. So what does that look like for the Pacific Northwest?
So for the Pacific Northwest, like the globe, no matter what we do, we're going to experience warming, right? We have already committed to that as a world society, right? Because we've already changed the atmosphere. So we're going to see continued warming. And over the next handful of decades, the average temperatures will be warmer than the extreme highs in the past. Mm-hmm. Right. So moving to a climate we haven't experienced. In the Northwest, our most important way of sort of storing water from the wet season when it arrives, when it rains and snows in the wintertime, to the rest of the year, when despite other people's perceptions, it doesn't rain and snow quite as much,
right,
is snowpack. Mm-hmm. Right. So as it gets warmer, we have less mountain snow. And that's our natural reservoir. So that has more implications than I think people really always think about, right? So you can think about, we want water for drinking, right? So it's stored in the mountains in the winter, comes down the rivers, and is in the summer during our dry period, we use it to drink and water our lawns, okay? So a decrease amount of water availability in the summertime for those kind of uses. We're not the only ones who use that summer water, right? There's fish that we actually care a lot about, and we have laws to protect them. And so decreased summer stream flow and warmer summer temperatures are bad for the cold water fish, like the salmon that we care a lot about.
I think the trouble is, the reason it hasn't gotten traction, the reason things like the carbon fear voted down, is that when you ask about the cost, you never get a straight answer. People say, well, we can't tell you that now. And that's where the distrust comes in, because the straight answer that everybody assumes in the straight answer is 50 cents a gallon, $1 a gallon, $2 a gallon, European style prices. Let me ask you this. Is there any way that you can tell people the unvarnished truth about what they have to do and have it still be politically acceptable, such that people would vote for such a thing?
So now you're asking a scientist to be a politician.
Well, and you know, unless you are, I don't think any of this is going to happen, right? Because you guys have been throwing the data at us for years. What you've predicted, this was this much I'll say, what you predicted has started coming true, right? Even sooner than we thought. And are people moved by that still?
Well, I have seen more concern. Well, okay. So people, in my opinion, are not as moved by this as the urgency of the situation warrants. It's very alarming to look at the projections. I've been looking at these projections for over 20 years, and it was alarming to look at them when they seemed even to me like they were going to happen quite a while in the future. And to see it happening around you and examples of the kinds of problems we're likely to expect unfold where you live, in the places you care about, where people you know live, is really, really hard to see. And so I completely agree. We're not addressing this with the urgency it warrants. I think one of the hard parts about understanding exactly what to do is that we have to get out of the habit of thinking that this is something far off in the future that may or may not happen. This is here and now. This is being caused by our activities. Scientists around the world agree on this. We know that we're making a choice, and we're every day we are making a choice, whether we realize it or not, to make the problem worse or to start making it better. And we have time and we have actions open to us if we do it.
But that requires making a decision that would cost us money and would involve imposing new habits on people.
You know, when I think about addressing climate change and putting a price on the pollution that is causing this problem in the first place and is being allowed to happen for free with no cost, Sure, it's going to be more expensive to do those activities that are polluting in the future. The whole point is not to do those anymore, right? Right now, I don't have many options for ways to heat my home or ways to get around in an affordable way. So the ways I do it now that pollute will be more expensive in the future, which means that our wonderful economy, where we're already developing alternative fuel sources and alternative methods of transportation, will kick into high gear and we will have options. We will not be trapped in a situation where all we can do is pay the higher price for the polluting activity. We can walk away from that polluting activity and engage in a clean energy future.
Dr. Amy Snover is director of the UW Climate Impacts Group. Thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
When a 13-year-old was shot at a Metro bus stop in Des Moines last week and pleaded for help from passersby for the injury, those pleas were largely ignored. People did not want to get involved. And it's a story that hit home for one local mom who has a message for the boy and his family and for the rest of us. And Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott is here to tell us the story.
Dave, the 13-year-old was shot in the arm Monday morning in what cops believe was a random drive-by shooting. He's going to be okay, but when the boy tried to flag down cars for help and was ignored, he was forced to run to another bus stop where finally someone did call 911 and he was helped. The Tukwila School District, where this boy is a student, says the boy's family was horrified by the lack of response by most people to a terrified young boy begging for help. When Ayanna Brown, who just retired from the Tukwila School District, heard about what had happened from her colleagues, she said it was all too familiar.
This young person was asking for help, and no one would help. People were denying helping him. And so it just immediately made me remember what we learned during Olajuwon's case.
Olajuwon was her 12-year-old son who in 2010 was shot when he got off of a bus in Skyway at a gas station by a gang member who mistook him for a rival gang member because of the blue jacket he was wearing. But what happened as Olajuwon lay dying in that gas station was just as horrific.
He was asking for help. Witnesses said that he was saying, I've been shot. Somebody please help me. And there were quite a few individuals who refused to help him.
Ayanna did not find out about the people refusing to answer her son's pleas for help until 2 years after he died during the killer's trial. And she was crushed by the lack of humanity that her son experienced. One witness got off of the same bus as Olajuwon and saw everything from the shooting to Olajuwon's begging for help.
He was asked, did she call 911? And his response was no. They didn't have nothing to do with me. They weren't shooting at me. It wasn't none of my business. What I'm going to call 911 for.
That witness's older brother was pumping gas at the gas station where Olajuwon was shot.
Yet again, witnesses the whole thing. Here's my baby pleading for help. And apparently Olajuwon dropped his, you know, he dropped his bag. And instead of him helping my baby, he finished pumping his gas, put the gas cap on his tank, got in his car, pulled up to where Olajuwon dropped his bag and stole his bag.
And she was crushed in the courtroom listening to the lack of humanity that her son experienced.
And so now here I am, I'm having these mixed emotions because they're testifying on our behalf. But at the same time, I want to throw a brick and hit you in the middle of your forehead.
And there were several others in the gas station parking lot, including some who refused to call 911, even when somebody else had asked them to do so by handing them a phone of their own.
I just don't understand how the human side doesn't kick in. I mean, even if you are fearing for your own personal safety and don't want to directly get involved, can you at least call 911?
There were a couple of people who did help, including two who tried to keep Olajuwon alive until the ambulance arrived. But nearly a decade after her son's death, it's the thoughts of her son's pleas going unanswered that haunt her. Ariana does not know the family of the boy who was shot on Monday and was heartbroken to hear about what had happened. Her message for that boy?
I am so happy that he is okay physically, that he physically survived this.
And she has this message for the rest of us.
On behalf of myself and other parents and these parents, I'm just making the appeal to the general public. If you see something, make a call. Even if you feel like your own safety is in jeopardy, keep yourself safe and make the call.
Yeah, you can at least do that. Although we have a number of stories about good Samaritans who try to help and then they themselves end up getting hurt.
She says that, go around the block, if depending on this situation. In her son's situation, this is a very open gas station area where there were a lot of people around. And there was the boy had just gone to the Walmart to buy some football cleats for himself with money he earned mowing lawns. And that person who was pumping gas stole that. Walked over him, finished pumping his gas. So really a lack of humanity. And that was, again, her overall thing here. There's so much conflict in politics, in public, and everything we hear about these days. And to hear about anyone's pleas going ignored, especially when we're talking about children after they've been shot, is heartbreaking. And we just need to be better people, I think, is her overall message, while keeping ourselves safe.
A lot of what makes a community a safe community is the character of the people living there.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely. And I would hope that if anyone saw anything like that happen to my kid, that they would help or call.
Yeah. Thanks, Hannah. Mm-hmm. We go to Washington, D.C. When Michael Cohen, the president's former lawyer, pleaded guilty to lying to Congress, some people asked, what's next? And others asked, so what? But a lot of people just want to know when special counsel Robert Mueller plans to release the full report of his investigation into the Trump campaign. We talked with Face the Nation host Margaret Brennan. I asked her, are we going to be seeing it anytime soon?
I don't know that we will see that report because there's still no pledge to make it public. It seems we are in the final stages of this probe, but no one will commit to a timeline here. It looks like we're headed into 2019, and Senate Intelligence Committee also has its own version of its investigation. We'll have Senator Mark Warner, the ranking member among Democrats, leading that intelligence probe, and they also won't commit to a timeline here because I think they want to see what the special counsel comes out with before Congress gives its final word.
Is there any way they can not make it public? I don't see it. I mean, it's going to have to come out one way or the other, isn't it?
Well, that seems to be the bet that you could force the hand because this report by the special counsel will get turned into the Department of Justice, and it'll be whoever's in that role. Remember, we don't have a confirmed attorney general at the time. We have an acting one at the moment. It'll be up to that individual, whoever is running the agency at that point, to decide what to make public and when. Now, the game changer is that you have a Democratic controlled House come January with the new Congress, and you have subpoena power. So could someone who, say, the House Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings, subpoena the findings of the report and then make them public? When I interviewed Nancy Pelosi, the looks certainly like she's going to be Speaker of the House. A few weeks ago, she said she thinks it is in the public interest. The public has a right to know, and that they will try to make those public.
Speaking of Nancy Pelosi, I imagine you talked to her about the apparent divisions in the Democratic caucus. Well, can you explain to us what the nature of the division is? Who's on what side and who's on the other side?
Nancy Pelosi, who was the first female speaker, is poised to become speaker once again, has something like 203 votes right now to move forward as speaker, for Democrats to select her as basically their leader on Capitol Hill in the House of Representatives. But that does have to go to a final vote in January, and she doesn't have the 218 that she needs. That may just be a matter of time. She's good at wrangling votes, right? That's what her job has been in many ways as leader. So the question is those holdouts. What is it that they're negotiating for? Those who have said they won't support her or haven't said either way how they'll vote. There's been push among some, like Congressman Tim Ryan, to have what he's calling, you know, more young, diverse leadership at the top, a new face for a new Congress. Nancy Pelosi's pushback has been, you don't need new, you need good and experienced. That's her argument. She knows how to do the job, she does it well, and that's why she should be in the leadership position. So it's really, in many ways, getting at that broader identity crisis. What's the face they want to put forward to the American public that will help continue to earn them support? But also, there is some politics within the party as to who's wrangling to run which committee and how to convince Nancy Pelosi to help put them at the head of that committee.
But so far, there are no other Democratic candidates. So
right.
If they hold the vote and she only gets 208 votes, what does that mean? A Republican runs, becomes Speaker? How does that work?
No. It's an interesting question, and people are sort of trying to game out what that means. If people vote, it gets into technicalities. If they vote present versus voting for her, what does that mean in terms of actually preventing her from moving forward the speakership? Right now, these things seem to be hypotheticals because she seems confident that she can get those final votes to cross the hurdle. It's a matter of sort of wrangling as to who wants what in order to secure their vote.
And I hear that some of the most emotional opponents to Nancy Pelosi are people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her caucus. What is their agenda?
It's not clear that there is a caucus or an agenda in terms of an organized set of things being put forward by some of the new progressives that you're talking about. I believe other progressives who had been on the line, I know a few of them who were on my show a few weeks ago, had said since they've come to Washington, they've crossed over and now believe that Nancy Pelosi is the person who should be leader.
Margaret Brennan, host of CBS's Face the Nation, our guests this Sunday include Senators John Tester, Mark Warner, and Jeff Flake. This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien joining us now. Movie man Michael Medved. Disney's Ralph Breaks the Internet, featuring Wreck-It Ralph.
Shouldn't it be Ralph Wrecks the Internet?
Yeah, since he is Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, but break the Internet, it's like a thing.
Right, it's just Wreck the Internet kind of sounds better, doesn't it?
You're not wrong.
This is going to be, I think, one of the holiday offerings that's going to be around through the beginning of next year, because it's really a terrific movie, much to my shock.
Now, why are you shocked that something called Wreck-It Ralph would become especially in Disney's hands, would become a universally accepted character?
Well, because the first film was good and clever and touching, but this is just so marvelously inventive. And by the way, very expensive film to make. This cost $300 million.
Looks like it, too.
It does. The two main stars are, of course, Vanellope and Wreck-It Ralph, who are old pals from old-style video arcade games, who got together in the first film, and they're coming together now in this film to try to rescue a Vanellope who is potentially out of a job because her arcade game has been broken because someone broke the wheel on it, and they can't get a replacement wheel for this old game.
I see.
Except they can get it on something called eBay. and they go through all the different worlds of the internet, and apparently there are all kinds of things. I saw this film with my daughter, and she is, being a generation younger, much, much more savvy. She's explaining a lot of the references to me.
Interesting. You don't seem to have a search history. Well, let's start one for you. What can Knowsmore help you find today? Umbrella. Umbridge. Umami.
No.
Noah's Ark. No doubt. Nordstrom Rack. Ergonomics. Urban Outfitters. Cool.
Looks like no one put Humpty Dumpty together again. This guy's a little soft-boiled.
I'm pretty sure he's just trying to guess what you're gonna say.
Yes, I'm sorry, but my autofill is a touch aggressive today.
I mean, one of the things that is the real comic highlight of the film is it brings together virtually all the Disney princesses, including some princesses you may have forgotten about, like Mulan or Princess Tiana from The Princess and the Frog, but plus Snow White and Sleeping Beauty and Cinderella and all the rest of them, and Belle from Beauty and the Beast and Jasmine and Pocahontas. They're all there. And here's the amazing thing, and this is one of those things that is kind of gobsmacking from this movie, Ralph Wrecks the Internet. They actually have the voices from all of these original princesses. I mean, the ones who are alive and available. So the vocal cast is extraordinary.
Whoa, whoa, ladies, I'm a princess too.
What kind of a princess are you?
Do you have magic hair?
No.
Magic hands?
No.
Do animals talk to you?
No.
Were you poisoned?
No.
Cursed?
No.
Kidnapped or enslaved?
No. Are you guys okay? Should I call the police?
Do people assume all your problems got solved because a big, strong man showed up?
Yes. What is up with that?
She is a princess.
It's one of those things where I can't imagine somebody not enjoying it. Now, let me stipulate this. This is not going to be the wondrous world of enchantment that people get from other Disney princesses. After all, Princess Vanellope is voiced by Sarah Silverman. Wreck-It Ralph is voiced beautifully by John C. Reilly. Now, there's a musical number that is held out from the main film. You have to watch to the end of the credits, but it's kind of worth it. It's a big, big laugh. There are a number of interruptions in the credits that are very clever. This is partially the work of John Lasseter and other folks at Disney Animation now. And it's such a clever use of the medium. And it's an extremely likable film altogether.
I'm curious, these are $300 million.
Yeah.
Why is it worth investing that? Because when you watch the credits, the reason they have to interrupt the credits is because there are so many people working on these films.
Oh, yeah.
To get the animation
yes,
just right.
The entire population of Mongolia.
That's what it looks like to me. So why is it worth it to them? Do they really make that much money on these?
Well, look, I think when you're at that level of success that the people behind this film are, and which is a very, very high level of success, you want more than just profitability. You want to make a statement. One of the things that I think they do have a serious shot at is being nominated for Best Animated Film of the Year. Mm. I think they probably will be. And that's a very competitive category now because they do so many truly amazing animated films, the different studios. It's a strange moment in our popular culture when so much of what comes out as the most expensive and ambitious entertainment projects are basically recycles, remakes of live action, animated classics, or, I mean, how many different Spider-Man? We're about to have an animated Spider-Man. People simply can't get enough. And I think part of what happens here, Dave, is it's a vicious cycle, which is that as things get more and more expensive to make, and they do, that you are more and more forced into trying to do something that's a sure thing.
Right, a franchise. Audience. A guaranteed product.
Right.
Like McDonald's.
And there's a lot of contempt and anger when one of those products comes out and is disappointing, which, by the way, was the case with the Fantastic Beasts movie that just came out. And the thing that comes across on this film, virtually every segment pays off with a laugh or a sort of an amazement, and the prodigious number of references is quite extraordinary. 3.5 stars, and it is rated PG. There's really nothing that's inappropriate for young viewers, but I think the young viewers will find that a lot of the references go way over their
heads. Ralph Breaks the Internet, 3.5 stars. Michael Medved, thank you.
You bet.
good. Your Daily Dose of Kindness Now. It's brought to you by Spring Free Trampoline. Sometimes people who have the least end up giving the most. By all means, Rick Clark of Spokane had his own things to worry about. He was 44 years old, had a ninth grade education, was waiting to catch a bus at a terminal in downtown Spokane so he could register for community college. But he tells KXLY-TV it became clear he was there that day for another reason.
For the first time in my life, I put away my stuff that I was dealing with and I turned to somebody else and I asked him if he was hungry and he said he was starving.
Rick learned someone had stolen Jared's backpack. That's who he met that day. His backpack was his lifeline. So Rick took action and promised to return soon with a new backpack filled with food and other supplies. So Rick posted about the encounter on Facebook that night.
In 24 hours, we filled 25 backpacks full of toiletries and socks and food and gift cards. And it was just amazing.
Jared got a new backpack. And so did 24 other homeless people in Spokane. That was 4 years ago. Now Rick, who started that day with no high school diploma, is about to graduate from Gonzaga and is running a full-fledged nonprofit called Giving Backpacks. KXLY-TV says he's given 2,500 backpacks to date. And through all this giving, Rick says he got something in return.
You don't have to wait for that perfect job to help other people. You don't have to wait for your life to be in order. I was at my worst day, and it turned into the most beautiful day of my life.
It appears Giving Backpacks, his nonprofit, doesn't have an official website, but he does have a Facebook page if you'd like to check it out and maybe help him out.
And now, at 7:47, it's our Sports Insider, sponsored by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. And now, here he is from that jumbo popcorn tub of sports, 710 ESPN. It's a Blue Friday. Richard Sherman's going to be suiting up in scarlet and gold, and this week, on the subject of Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson said this.
I have tons of respect for Sherman, how he plays the game.
And?
He's going to be a Hall of Fame corner. He meant so much to our football team.
And?
He brings it every day at practice, even when he's hurt.
And on the subject of Russell Wilson, Richard Sherman said this.
I don't really have a relationship with Russell. We were teammates. We played during a very special time for the franchise.
And now this exchange with a reporter.
We've seen through the years what Russell is capable of doing.
Yeah, I've also seen him throw 5 picks in a game. So, you know, you see what he's capable of on both sides of it. So you understand that he can be defended.
So it almost seems like the love doesn't go both ways.
Yeah. You think? Yeah. Or someone's able to engage in political niceties and the other is not.
Well, hasn't Sherman always been that way, though?
A little contrarian?
Well, no, not that. Just no matter what, whatever side he's on, he's going to push back against the side he's not on.
That's true.
Loyalty, whatever.
You're right. That's very true.
So I'm just not surprised by this.
It's very consistent with how he's been, and it's just that some of his antagonism is now focused on people we like instead of on Jim Harbaugh.
And it's not, is it personal from Sherman or is it not?
Yeah, it's personal.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Because the intensity would lead me to believe that he does take it too far.
Sherman doesn't like the quarterback. Richard Sherman doesn't like Russell Wilson.
So it's not just the way the team treated him? It's
Russell specifically, the difference between how he feels the team treated Russell and how everybody else gets treated, and him feeling that it was wrong of the team to terminate him when he was injured and recovering from injury is contrasted against his feelings about how Russell's been treated.
Is it just because Russell's the star? Because the quarterback's always the star.
Correct. It is. And I'm not sure. I think it goes deeper than that. And I think there's some personal things that are wrapped up into it. But I don't know all the specifics of how Richard got so antagonized by Russell.
Okay, so that'd be a problem if he was still on the team. But he's not on the team.
No, he's not. But that's what makes Sunday so fascinating. Yeah. It's the first time that they'll match. Richard Sherman has a compulsive desire to have the last word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's part of what you're hearing there with, I'm not going to. It's very easy for an athlete to say something that is non-controversial when asked about someone he doesn't like. That's very easy. And that's not saying they should do it. And he chose not to go that route. He chose to say something that made it very clear that, like, yeah, I don't know about that guy. Right? That's
and you wanted it to get quoted.
I don't want it to be overly critical, but he made it pretty clear that, yeah, there's something going on there. And this is going to be his first chance to have the last word against Russell Wilson in Seattle.
It sounds like they need to have a crucial conversation.
It's possible either that or they need
inside.
To play. They need to play a game for 3 hours and see if Russell. I hope Russell throws 3 touchdowns over the top of Richard Sherman's head. I'd love to see that. And
I like Richard, and I look forward to the day when he's welcome back to Seattle, and but I also feel he's kind of Icarus, where he's flown too close to the sun, and he thinks he's a god, and like, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Russell will play that way? Do you think he will do... No, he'll just be a professional.
There's nothing in his DNA that would make him want to prove a point to Richard.
Uh-huh.
Everything in him will want to win the game, and I hope that when the Seahawks do, he feels a little extra bit of satisfaction where it's like, yeah!
So they're going to win.
I think so. I think they're going to roll them. I think Seattle's about to go on a streak.
They play them twice, once at home and then 2 weeks from now away.
The one 2 weeks from now is not going to be as big a deal. This is the big deal. It's the first game between them. The Niners aren't very good. They're 2-9. They're better than all the other 2-9 teams. But that's not saying much. They've blown a couple games. I think Seattle is about to get on one of the rolls that we saw 4 or 5 years ago in December, where they're going to pick up speed, and I think we're going to be amazed at what they're doing. But it's a really important game, and the San Francisco has a chance to spoil all this momentum that Seattle has built up.
Yeah, that would be bad. This whole personal thing would make a 49er win especially bad.
Yeah, it would be awful.
Yeah.
You'd go from being a footnote to being something that you choke on.
I'm not a fan of booing, but encourage Seahawks fans to boo Sherman?
Do you have to ask?
I like booing. No,
it surprises me sometimes.
I do love booing, and I also get booed at home. My wife boos my bad jokes, which are frequent.
Well, anybody would do that.
I do support booing. I don't support booing this athlete.
Like, if you would ask, just feed him, right?
There's part of it that'll just feed him.
Yeah.
The logistics are difficult because he's not going to be introduced. Do you wait until somebody throws it over? It's confusing how you would boo him. And honestly, the best reaction is just to cheer like crazy when someone scores over the top of him.
Mm. So, what's the score going to be?
I think it's going to be 35-13.
35-13?
That's correct. Yes.
That's a decisive win.
Yes, I think they're going to roll them, Dave.
So somebody misses an extra point, or there's two field goals.
Okay. Because the Niners aren't going to be able to stuff it in the end zone.
Got you. I just am fascinated by your prediction process.
Why?
Because you've been so close so many times.
Well, would it shock you to know that I didn't know that score until you just now asked me? That it's much more random than you might think?
Gut is
the best. That's when you're channeling something special.
Colleen's been reading Blink by Malcolm Gladwell.
That's right.
Your first instinct is often your best.
That's right. It's your animal brain.
Ooh, my animal brain?
Yeah.
I'll give you some of my animal brain.
No, rawr! Not today.
Wouldn't it be bad?
Thank you, Danny.
Bah.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you very much. Sports Insider is brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. And that was Danny O'Neill. .8:35 Seattle's Morning News. Today, did you know today is World Computer Security Day?
I had no idea.
It has been a thing since 1988.
What?
Every November 30th. World Computer, there's still time to send flowers to your IT department. It's also a good reminder to change your password, as if the huge Marriott data breach wasn't a good enough reminder. Let's talk with CBS Tech analyst Larry Magid. How did this breach happen, Larry?
Well, I was about to say I was going to celebrate the day by taking my wife to a Marriott this evening, but you kind of blew my line there. How did the Marriott one happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, good question. There was a breach in the Starwood system, which is that's their association of hotels. There are other brands besides Marriott that got access to names and, in some cases, passports and lots of information, gender, date of birth. I'm not sure if we know, at least at the last time I researched this, I didn't know exactly how it happened. Oh. I do know that it's been going on for 4 years. And what's scary about that is the advice I'm about to give is really hard to implement, which is go check your financial records.
Yeah.
Even the IRS doesn't usually go back 4 years. And it would be really hard for most people to check their records from 4 years ago. But do check your credit reports to see if there's been any issues there. And take advantage. You're going to get an email from them if you are vulnerable and they have your email, and they're going to offer you free monitoring services. And obviously, that's something you do want to take advantage of.
This keeps happening, and I go, okay, is there anything I can change about my behavior to prevent this from happening? But they make it really difficult to not leave a digital footprint at hotels anymore. I mean, you have to put a credit card on file. Yeah. You can't just pay in cash anymore. So what, does the industry need to change?
It's easy. Just throw away all your credit cards, throw away your phone, never get on an airplane. And by the way, make sure you don't have one of the newer cars that also follows you around. I think it is extremely difficult. The way I look at this it's almost like, you know, you're walking down the street and the plane crashes into you. There's very little you can do to protect yourself from data breaches from companies. We've even had cases like that credit bureau. I don't want to say the wrong credit bureau name. But anyway, that credit bureau thing where I wasn't even essentially a customer of theirs. Now, could you say, okay, never stay at a Marriott? Well, I wouldn't boycott Marriott's because this could happen at any hotel chain. It could happen to anything. So the answer is there's nothing you can do to prevent it, but there are things you can do to mitigate the damage and to protect yourself, things like tough, unique passwords. And by the way, if you go to larrysworld.com, all of this is laid out in detail, making sure your data is backed up, checking your credit reports, checking your financial records frequently every month, look at all of your credit card and check statements. All of those things help, but they can't fully protect you.
Well, what else would they do? I mean, we always check our credit card statement. I always get my wife puts me under interrogation for every single charge on there, right?
Right.
Beyond that, though, how are they? If somebody were to get this information on you, how would they be likely to use it?
Well, what might happen is it might go on the dark web, which is a scary term, but it's basically a part of the internet that you and I couldn't easily access, but criminals know how to do that. And it could have been sold. And in fact, I have gotten reports. I have a LifeLock subscription. I'm not suggesting everybody get that, but about every 2 months, I get a notice that something about me has been found on the dark web. And I pretty much, when I look into it, it's usually something really old that happened a long time ago. But that's probably what's going to happen is somewhere a Dave Ross credit card or passport number or other vital information is available to criminals. And that is a risk you take by living and breathing in 2018.
But I mean, they could try to get on a plane as me.
They probably wouldn't get in a plane as you, but they might try to get credit as you.
Although,
in your case, you're famous enough, I would probably not recommend that. But it could even happen to you.
Larry, I feel really defeated about this, that there's no better option out there. It's like you have you can't do anything about it. It's like your house getting egged. You don't know who did it. You have to clean it up. It's awful.
Here's the way I look at it. Every generation has had it. I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to live in Dodge City back in the days of the old West. Sorry about that. And there's always going to be risk. You know, you walk down the street, somebody could steal your wallet. You drive down the street, somebody could break your car window. So there are risks associated with being alive. I personally think that the benefits of technology outweigh the risks, but that doesn't mean there aren't risks.
Yeah. Yep. As they say in the computer business, I keep pressing escape, but I'm still here.
And I keep getting Skype calls while I'm on the radio. So what can I do? That's what life is all about. You've heard that one.
Thanks, Larry.
All right. Take care.